total destruction. Yet they were also fascinated by it, especially by the practices. How did the new seers know about those practices? I asked. They are the legacy of the old Toltecs, he said. The new seers learn about them as they go along. They hardly ever use them, but the practices are there as part of their knowledge. What kind of practices are they, Don Juan? They are very obscure formulas, incantations, lengthy procedures that have to do with the handling of a very mysterious force. At least, it was mysterious to the ancient Toltecs, who masked it and made it more horrifying than it really is. What is that mysterious force? I asked. It's a force that is present throughout everything there is, he said. The old seers never attempted to unravel the mystery of the force that made them create their secret practices. They simply accepted it as something sacred. But the new seers took a close look and called it will. The will of the eagle's emanations, or intent. Don Juan went on explaining that the ancient Toltecs had divided their secret knowledge into five sets of two categories each, the earth and the dark regions, fire and water, the above and the below, the loud and the silent, the moving and the stationary. He speculated that there must have been thousands of different techniques which became more and more intricate as time passed. The secret knowledge of the earth, he went on, had to do with everything that stands on the ground. There were particular sets of movements, words, unguents, potions that were applied to people, animals, insects, trees, small plants, rocks, soil. These were techniques that made the old seers into horrid beings, and their secret knowledge of the earth was employed either to groom or to destroy anything that stands on the ground. The counterpart of the earth was what they knew as the dark regions. These practices were by far the most dangerous. They dealt with entities without organic life. Living creatures that are present on the earth and populated together with all organic beings. Doubtlessly, one of the most worthwhile findings of the ancient seers, especially for them, was the discovery that organic life is not the only form of life present on this earth. I did not quite comprehend what he had said. I waited for him to clarify his statements. Organic beings are not the only creatures that have life, he said, and paused again as if to allow me time to think his statements over. I countered with a long argument about the definition of life and being alive. I talked about reproduction, metabolism, and growth, the processes that distinguish live organisms from inanimate things. You're drawing from the organic, he said. But that's only one instance. You shouldn't draw all you have to say from one category alone. But how else can it be? I asked. For seers, to be alive means to be aware, he replied. For the average man, to be aware means to be an organism. This is where seers are different. For them to be aware means that the emanations that cause awareness are encased inside a receptacle. Organic living beings have a cocoon that encloses the emanations, but there are other creatures whose receptacles don't look like a cocoon to a seer. Yet they have the emanations of awareness in them and characteristics of life other than reproduction and metabolism. Such as what, Don Juan? Such as emotional dependency, sadness, joy, wrath, and so forth and so on. And, I forgot the best yet, love. A kind of love man can't even conceive. Are you serious, Don Juan? I asked in earnest. Inanimately serious, he answered with a deadpan expression, and then broke into laughter. If we take as our clue what seers see, he continued, life is indeed extraordinary. If those beings are alive, why don't they make themselves known to man? I asked. They do, all the time, and not only to seers, but also to the average man. The problem is that all the energy available is consumed by the first attention. Man's inventory not only takes it all, but it also toughens the cocoon to the point of making it inflexible. Under those circumstances, there is no possible interaction. He reminded me of the countless times in the course of my apprenticeship with him when I had had a first-hand view of inorganic beings. I retorted that I had explained away nearly every one of those instances. I had even formulated the hypothesis that his teachings, through the use of hallucinogenic plants, were geared to force an agreement on the part of the apprentice about a primitive interpretation of the world. I told him that I had not formally called it primitive interpretation, but in anthropological terms, I had labeled it a worldview more proper to hunting and gathering societies. Don Juan laughed until he was out of breath. I really don't know whether you're worse in your normal state of awareness or in a heightened one, he said. In your normal state, you're not suspicious, but boringly reasonable. I think I like you best when you are way inside the left side, in spite of the fact that you are terribly afraid of everything, as you were yesterday. Before I had time to say anything at all, he stated that he was pitting what the old seers did against the accomplishments of the new seers as a sort of counterpoint, with which he intended to give me a more inclusive view of the odds I was up against. He continued then with his elucidation of the practices of the old seers. He said that another of their great findings had to do with the next category of secret knowledge, fire and water. They discovered that flames have a most peculiar quality. They can transport man bodily, just as water does. Don Juan called it a brilliant discovery. I remarked that there are basic laws of physics that would prove that to be impossible. He asked me to wait until he had explained everything before drawing any conclusions. He remarked that I had to check my excessive rationality because it constantly affected my states of heightened awareness. It wasn't a case of reacting every which way to external influences, but of succumbing to my own devices.